happy day.
Oh, happy day.
When Jesus
live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Oh, happy day.
I'm Gary Null, broadcasting and video streaming live from our studio in New York City. And I welcome you. Today, we're going to talk about what's in a grape that could make a difference for our health, especially if we have problems losing weight and losing our energy. Then, if you have anxiety or depression, there's something you can do that'll make a difference and relieve it. Also, study shows that children born outside the United States have a much lower risk of having allergies. Why so? Will green tea help you lose weight? These are just some of the many comments I'm going to be addressing, plus four natural ways to help get rid of fibromyalgia pain and inflammation. So that's health and nutrition. Then we're going to have a newsmaker on the phone for a few moments. Dr. Michael Hudson is one of our nation's important economists and Wall Street financial analysts. And I'm going to ask him just a basic question. When we hear of the austerity programs in Greece and Cyprus, Spain and Ireland, and Latvia, many people assume that the money taken from people's pensions, their savings account in banks, is going to help pay down the debt of the country, pay off its bills, help support its infrastructure. Not true. Then where does all the money go? And why can't they simply forgive it? Let the country start to rebuild. Let them re-energize. Just keep cutting back social programs, cutting back jobs, outsourcing jobs to other countries. That's never going to be good for a country. So what's this all about? Who's making these hundreds of billions of dollars from all these different countries? He'll be giving us hints and insights. And then we'll have environmental information about that dangerous San Onofre nuclear facility. And our listeners on KPFK, you'll want to listen to this because a whistleblower says there's potentially catastrophic design flaws in a high percentage of the pipes that could cause that whole place to melt down. We'll give you that. Also, from our issues area, from Professor Lawrence Whitner, war is good for business, and the U.S. is the largest military spender worldwide. Now, yes, it means austerity for most Americans, but it means billions for those who are rich. San Diego County considers forcing residents to take psychiatric medication under Laura Law. Also, psychiatric MDs dispense dangerous drugs with impunity, all for profit, from Paula Fassa. And time permitting, how cable news terrorizes America. And we'll share that with you. A lot to talk about. Let us begin. Organic grapes, and they really should only be organic because non-organic grapes are heavily sprayed many times. But organic grapes, and right now they're in season, purple are in, blue are in, and red are in. And throughout the season, more variety of grapes are coming online. I grow grapes. In fact, if you go to my website and look under photos and look under my Florida home, you'll see at least three different types of grapes And one of them is a muscadine, which is a large purple grape with a very thick skin, very crunchy. Almost has the consistency of eating toast when you break into its skin. Then this delicious orb inside just bursts its flavors in your mouth. It's wonderful to eat, easy to grow, and very hearty. But there are other types of grapes as well. It's not difficult to grow grapes. In fact, over the next 3 months, I'm building a year-round arbor for your backyard. So if you're in Queens or if you're in Alaska, if you're up in Toronto or any place else in the Rockies, we have people in over 160 countries listening. I'll show you in under 3 days how to build a 12-month-a-year, completely enclosed place to grow grapes. And then I'll show you how to grow grapes so you get more grapes and tastier grapes, and then what to do with those grapes. So all that's coming at you. But here's the latest on why grapes should be consumed on a regular basis. I believe grapes or grape juice or grape concentrate should be a daily part of our lives because the grape skin has got amazing healing power. But the grape seed has even more healing power. So both together represent 90% of what's a healing in a grape. The actual tasty part of the grape, the soft inner flesh, that has the least amount of nutrients. The latest on grapes from University of Michigan Health Science System, it says the following. Grapes can help protect your organs from metabolic syndrome damaging effects. I'll quote this from Experimental Biology Conference in Boston this week. It says that there is a protective effect from grapes against the damaging effects of metabolic syndrome that leads to diabetes, for example, or hypoglycemia and heart disease. Now, we know that you can also have metabolic syndrome and end up with hypertension, and you can end up with too many of the low-density lipoproteins and too few of the high-density lipoproteins. You can end up with elevated cholesterol, and also your waist gets bigger. All this distorts your blood lipid profile, and all that can increase your risk of cardiovascular disease and diabetes. All of that also increases inflammation and oxidative stress. All of that prematurely ages your tissue, and as I've said many times, it's cumulative. So every time that you do anything that creates oxidative stress, counterbalance that with something that reduces oxidative stress, like an antioxidant. Anytime you take vitamin C or vitamin E, coenzyme Q10, any of the many different antioxidants, you're trapping free radicals, and the free radicals are what damage your cells. Hence, before I go for a workout in the morning, and by the way, this Sunday will be the final Sunday that people can come and join us to begin training for the New York Marathon. We meet at 9 o'clock at 90th and 5th Avenue in Central Park. It's free. We've had over 100 people come this far. So come and join us. It's a wonderful experience. Last evening, they were all here in our office watching a upcoming film that will be released in about 3 months from now. But every Monday, they get to watch a not-before-seen film. We have lots of discussion. It's a wonderful opportunity to get yourself really healthy. So that's this Sunday, because after that, we're too far along in our training to keep starting over every week with new people. But this will be your last chance to come and join us. In any case, when we go out for a run, I always take my vitamin C and about 15 different antioxidants because one loop around Central Park, which is 6 miles, creates a lot of free radicals because you're breathing. And oxidative stress is a byproduct of heavy breathing. By taking the vitamins before and after the workout, you're trapping those excess free radicals that prevents your cells from being damaged. Hence, you get the benefit of a good workout, lower pulse rate when you're resting, stronger circulation, better microcirculation to your extremities, including your legs, good for varicosities and varicose veins, great for bruising, helping strengthen your detoxification, better mood because of the hormone balancing effect of the endorphins that come from about 45 minutes of aerobic activity. All that comes from the good side of exercise. But you also get the downside, free radicals, hence antioxidants. So even having some grapes and grape juice after a workout, that helps protect you. But this is a good study, and it showed that whether it was green, red, and black powder, they did that it was very beneficial. Quote, our study suggests that a grape-enriched diet plays an important critical role in protecting against metabolic syndrome and the toll it takes on the body and its organs. Both inflammation and oxidative stress play a role in cardiovascular disease progression and organ dysfunction and type 2 diabetes. Grape intake impacted both of these components in several tissues, which is a very promising thing. End quote. So, one more reason to make sure you're getting your grapes or grape juice. Anxiety and stress can be helped with exercise. This is from Medical News Today, University of Colorado at Boulder. And it says, being forced to exercise may still help reduce anxiety and depression, just as exercising voluntarily does. Past studies have shown that people who exercise are more protected against stress-induced disorders. By the way, that would be heart disease and cancer. So, the bottom line, if you're stressed, if you're anxious, exercise. A good bike or jog or power walk will help you in immeasurable ways. Also, a separate study done at Bern University shows that those individuals who exercise had liver protection from liver cancer. 60 minutes a day, 5 days a week, and then they compared that in this study to those that did not exercise. Big difference for 32 weeks regular exercise. So exercise could help protect you against liver cancer. Now, a lot of Americans have allergies. We're talking about almost 100 million Americans. Almost one-third of the American population have allergies, and children are very susceptible. I believe that the amount of vaccines that they're getting is a contributing factor, but also the heavy particulate matter in our environment, plus breaking down their immune system with all these refined carbohydrates, simple sugars, junk food. This is the latest study from Roosevelt Hospital Center, New York. It says the following. The study suggests U.S. children born outside the United States have lower risks of allergic disease. In conclusion, quote, foreign-born Americans have significantly lower risk of allergic disease than U.S.-born. Okay, why? Well, from my studies in the Caribbean, going all over to every island from South America, I've been to all of them. There's healthier air, cleaner water, more exercise, more time spent playing outdoors than indoors, healthier diet, and that makes an enormous difference. Also, they don't have the heavy vaccine schedule American children have. Will green tea help you lose weight? Well, according to a study done at the Kim Young University School of Medicine in South Korea, the answer is yes. Quote, evidence has been shown that green tea extract may be effective as a useful weight control and glucose regulator in type 2 diabetes. So for those of you who have metabolic syndrome or overweight or diabetic, I would suggest 200 to 400 milligrams a day of green tea, non-caffeinated. And finally, more evidence suggests eating the omega-3s, both vegan and from fish oil, and avoiding meat, dairy linked to preserving memory. This is in the University of Alabama. This is an article published in the peer-reviewed journal Neurology from the American Academy of Neurology. Quote, University of Alabama study supports the Mediterranean diet, which emphasizes consuming foods that contain the omega-3 fatty acids. And since there are no definitive treatments for most dementing illnesses, modifiable activities such as diet may delay the onset of symptoms of dementia are very important. They studied 30,000 people, 45 and older. They're right, and I certainly commend them on this. On Friday, four individuals came by the office to give some written testimony that we're putting up online about how a change in lifestyle substantially altered their progression of multiple sclerosis, autism, Parkinson's, and Alzheimer's. Real people, not just slowing it down, but reversing it completely in all cases. So I'll be sharing that information with you, and then we're going to do a webinar where anyone in the world, and I'm encouraging physicians and public health advocates and scientists, nurses, dietitians, to join in when I announce this, because you'll have a chance to see and speak with these individuals who will all be together on a panel discussing how they were able to change the quality of their life completely. Because we keep being told there's no evidence that anyone can ever reverse any of that, and I keep reversing it. So I want my audience knows that. You've heard these people. They've been on the air. You've seen them in documentaries. You've seen them in support groups. But we want to get this information out to more open and progressive-minded healthcare practitioners so they can use these protocols to help people they're working with. And we need this out there because we're facing the largest health crisis in American history. We're approaching now 100 million people over 45. And so many of those in their 40s and 50s are now taking care of parents with dementia, Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, etc. And it's good to know that there are things that can help them. So that's good information. And tomorrow I'll deal with the alternatives to banishing fibromyalgia, pain, and inflammation. We're going to go to our newsmaker, Dr. Michael Hudson, in just a moment. Please stay with us. Welcome, all of you. I'm Gary Knoll. Let's go over and say hello to Dr. Michael Hudson.
Thank you very much, Gary.
Michael, I just have two primary questions for our newsmaker segment. One is, we keep hearing about how austerity programs throughout the European Union's 27 different member states, countries, are crippling the local economies. Higher unemployment, businesses closing, and yet we're told that that money that is being saved from cutting back their pensions, reducing their quality of life is important, so that the European Union, the European Central Bank, the International Monetary Fund, and different bondholders can all feel comfortable that these people are now creating financially responsible governments. And my question is this. I'm not aware of how any country, whether it's Ireland or Latvia or Italy, I don't know how they can cut back on all these different social programs and expect anything but misery. And why? Where does this money go? Where do all these billions of dollars go? Like the Cypriotic banks, they froze 100% of the money over $112,000. 60% of that was now considered a tax. 40% was considered an investment in the bank that they hopefully will get some return on in 4 to 5 years. That meant that a lot of small business people and a lot of other people simply didn't have any more money in the bank. Where did that money go? Who gets it?
Basically, the bondholders got it, and the creditors of the foreign banks. What happened a few years ago, last year and the year before, was that pressure was brought on Cyprus to buy a lot of bonds of the Greek government. The European Union went to the Cypriot government and said, we want you and the major banks to buy Greek bonds so that the Greek government can have enough money to enable the bondholders in Germany and France and England to take their money and run. So Cyprus turned over a lot of the savings of its depositors, not only Russian depositors, but also depositors who were looking to launder their money freely, dictators, drug dealers, criminals, who found Cyprus to be an offshore banking center. That meant a tax avoidance center. That meant sort of a free-for-all. So they took this money by essentially tax avoiders all over the world, and they bought Greek government bonds so that the Greek government could pay the bondholders in Northern Europe. Well, then Greece defaulted, wrote down the value of its bonds, and this left the Cypriot government and the Cypriot banks, especially the banks who were most closely tied to Greeks and to Greek tax evaders, on the hook. The big banks that dealt with Russian money were pretty much not affected because they'd already moved their money into Latvia and into other places. But the Cypriot banks, Cyprus is part of the Greek cultural area, at least for the Greek Cyprus. So the Greek banks lost their money, were insolvent. The rest of the Cyprus island is Turkish Cyprus. They were not affected at all. They were in a pretty strong position. So the Cypriot government and the banks were told, now you have to impose an austerity program to tax the people to repay the European Central Bank for the money that the European Central Bank has given you to pay the foreign bondholders. Now, this all seems pretty crazy. Even the what you're seeing in Cyprus and Greece and the austerity countries in Europe, as you pointed out, is self-defeating, and it was exactly what happened throughout the Third World countries, Latin America and Africa in the 1970s and 1960s and 1980s, by the World Bank and the IMF when they imposed austerity programs under usually military dictatorships to impose austerity to pay foreign banks and bondholders. What's significant is that last week, even the International Monetary Fund came out and said, look, we've learned austerity programs don't work by cutting back pensions, by cutting back social spending. You're going to shrink the economy and make it even harder to pay debts and to pay taxes, so you're actually worsening the tax situation by imposing this kind of austerity. You're killing the economy to save it. In other words, they're doing in Cyprus exactly what President Obama is trying to do here. He's trying to cut back, in both cases, they're trying to cut back Social Security, cut back pensions, cut back the economy, as if somehow this is going to make the economy richer. And it won't make the economy richer. It's just giving money to the bondholders and the banks to take the money and run.
Why can't they simply forgive this debt so the countries can start to rebuild?
Because the bondholders are willing to sacrifice the entire economy and plunge the entire economy into depression so that they won't lose a single penny. The bondholders there are just like Citibank here and Goldman Sachs. They say any loss has to be by the 99%. We, the 1%, won't lose a penny. We would rather push you into a depression. We would rather have you lose all your money than for us to lose 1 cent. This is the new class war.
How does this help a country get back on its feet? And does this push that many people in the country, especially the younger generation that has nothing to look forward to, into challenging the government, bringing down the government, revolting?
Well, it helps the country get back on its feet by a 50% unemployment rate for new graduates and for young people in Spain, Greece, and other debtor countries. It helps them by saying the population should leave the country. If you leave the country, you'll get back on your feet, because then all you'll have are your natural resources and enough people to act as servants for the tourist trade for us to come down there. It helps the country by killing it. That's the financial game plan.
But we're doing something similarly in the United States. I would, and how is it that we're immune from what is the likely outcome I see happening in Europe over the next 3 years?
Well, we're not altogether immune, because the economy here really isn't growing very much and really is shrinking. The one difference between the United States and Europe is the United States has a central bank that can simply print the money. And what you've got in the United States is the largest increase in printed money in history. The Federal Reserve simply took $13 trillion worth of bad debts onto the public balance sheet and added it to the government debt. So we're willing to add to the government debt as long as it's to pay the 1%. But the internal contradiction here is the government says, look, we can create on our electronic keyboards $13 trillion to pay the banks and bail out AIG and the insurance companies. But in 50 years, we're going to have to spend $1 trillion, less than 10% of that, on Social Security. We can't spend a single penny on Social Security or Medicare. We can only create money to pay the banks, only create money to pay the major campaign contributors of our administration. That's what we're doing. And these are the people that President Obama has appointed as Treasury Secretary. They're from Citibank. They're from Wall Street. He's appointed the bankers to manage the money supply, and they're managing, essentially, they're looting, they're printing, using the printing press to pay themselves, not to pay the Social Security recipients, not to pay Medicare, to cut back social programs. So the important thing about Cyprus and Greece is that that's the U.S. future if we leave policy along the lines that it's now being done, not only by Obama, but by the Republicans as well.
One of the people listening to this program right now is a friend that owns a health food store in the Detroit area. I suggested that the store be sold and to open up in a different area of the United States, better quality of life. And the person said, no. Well, now I'm getting regular emails of how not just employees, but the customers are stealing. The crime is up. There's just a basic lack of quality of life. And I'm seeing this across the board, and yet it's not being brought to the American public's attention. Therefore, if we don't see a problem, we assume it doesn't exist. We see apartments skyrocketing in value, both for sale and for rent. We see less than 1% of vacancy in New York City. We see every shop. You live on the Upper West. You're familiar with the Upper West Side.
Yeah.
You walk up and down. Every restaurant is filled. The stores are booming. And yet you go just across the bridge, and north, south, and west, you're in a different world. And you go out to where I just came back from, you think you came from a different planet where people are suffering, yet we are not talking about their suffering nor giving them any solutions. Why can't the banks and the federal government get rid of the interest on student loans, get rid of the interest on payday loans, credit card loans, and mortgages, to give people a chance, not what they owe, but just the interest, to give them a chance to get back on their feet? Why can't they do that?
Well, Gary, you have a broader view of the economy than economists have. Economists tend to be tunnel visioned. And the reality is if you're looking at the entire economy, then all, for the last few hundred years, not only in America, but in Europe, when you have poverty and you have people losing their jobs, you have an increase in disease, you have a shorter lifespan, you have lower family formation, lower birth rates. You mentioned student loans right now. When students have to pay back the student loans and can't wipe them out in bankruptcy, they have to pay such high loans, hundreds of thousands of dollars, for instance, for NYU or Columbia here, that they can't afford the $4,500 a month that is the average New York City apartment rent. So they have to live at home with their family. If they live at home with their family, they can't afford to get married. They can't afford to start a new family. They can't afford to buy a house. And so you forcing people to pay the student loans, and we're talking about over $1 trillion. Student loan debt is higher than all the credit card debt in the United States. Trying to insist that young people pay these loans means that they can't afford to be part of the market, and they can't afford to spend the rest of whatever income they have on goods or services or starting a family. So this is one of the major features that's shrinking the economy and making it harder to pay the debts and harder to get a job and pay taxes. So the solution that Citibank and Goldman Sachs and the other people you mentioned is makes the rest of the economy poor. The answer to your question is they don't care. All they care, they're tunnel visioned, they just care about getting paid and making money to pay their bondholders and their partners. And that's why their executive salaries and bonuses are going up into millions of dollars, and they can afford these apartments. They can afford to sit in the restaurants you walk by. But the rest of the people, the 99%, are being impoverished because, as you say, if it's not printed in the paper and made news, it hasn't become a political issue for the 99%.
Michael, always thank you very much for your insights. By the way, Michael is the author of some very important books and articles, the latest being The Bubble and Beyond, Fictitious Capital, Debt Deflation, and Global Crisis. His website is michael-hudson.com. Nice to hear from you, Michael.
Thanks a lot, Gary. It's always good to be on your show.
Back in a moment with commentaries, issues, and then opening our phones for your talk back. Just a couple little program announcements before we go to our commentaries and issues and opening our phone lines. Tonight, we have freed up three more tickets to the premiere of Seeds of Death, the GMOs, the genetically modified foods. I'll be there giving a discussion, Q&A afterwards. 7:40, we're actually going to start the film. It's listed 7:30, but I always like to give people a chance to get there. And if you want to be, because it's been sold out from the beginning, but we keep asking people, if you're not coming, call in. So three more did. So the number to call, 212-254-1109, 212-254-1109. And I think it's $5, that's all. And it's at the Theater for the New City, 12th Street and 1st Avenue tonight. Now, we have a special each week that we give so that people who want some really good supplement can have it and benefit from it. Here is our special today. This is what I take with me. This is the Supremacy powder. I remember once walking into a physician's office And there on the at his desk was this bottle of Supremacy, my Supremacy. And I said, "You give that to patients?" He said, "Yeah." He said, "But I take it myself." And with that, he opened it and just threw a bunch of this powder back in his mouth, took some water. I said, "Well, how much you take a day?" He said, "You wouldn't want to know." I'm guessing he took 10, 20,000 milligrams, but he's healthy. A lot of people use Supremacy. This is Supremacy, the high-potency bioflavonoids with acerola, highly absorbable, lots of minerals. It's buffered. This is the strawberry. This is a heavy one. This is 24 ounces. You're getting the, let's say, in a single quarter of a teaspoon, you're getting 625 milligrams. This is the most popular vitamin that I have. It's been around for a long time. And it's as good as I can make it. This is the, for many people, the best vitamin C they can take. They take it throughout the day, and under stressful times, they take more. It's called Supremacy. Supremacy, and you're going to get a big discount with two bottles. All right? So I think it's $69.95 for two bottles. That's a phenomenal price. Great savings. Give a call, 877-627-5065. 877-627-5065. We have 542 bottles. I was told. So no more than two per person at max. 877-627-5065. Now to our environmental segment. I am asking the legislator who appeared on this program last week to put forward some bills in the Albany legislature to close Indian Point, to label genetically engineered food, and to put a moratorium indefinitely on gas hydrofracking, and then to pass out to all the different state legislators information on each one of these so that the other legislators will realize that they're on the right side of science, right side of public health issues, and right side of the truth by doing that, and also to have a demonstration in front of the governor's office, as we did a couple years ago, 2 years ago, with thousands of people, and he's going to get back to me next week, and if he says yes, then in the next month we'll have that demonstration, and then we'll have someone really working on our behalf in Albany, and that's good. Closing down every nuclear power plant is what we should be doing. This is one more reason why to close down the one in California, the San Onofre, quote, from Common Dreams, a former safety engineer with the San Onofre Nuclear Generating Station is blowing the whistle on a potentially catastrophic problem at the currently offline Southern California Edison plant. According to a report by San Diego's Channel 10 News, the unnamed source, who has 25 years working in the field of nuclear safety, said that a faulty redesign of the plant's steam generators has put the system at risk of a full or partial meltdown. Quote, "There is something grossly wrong," he told the station. And since the Mitsubishi Heavy Industry undertook a redesign of the generator 2 years ago, the tubes that carry scalding water and steam from the generator have been crashing into one another, creating cracks and, quote, "unprecedented tube failure." Of 19,400 tubes, a Nuclear Regulatory Commission report found 17% were damaged. And that's bad. Quote, according to Dr. Joe Hopenfeld, a former employee for the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, the worst-case scenario is the main steam line break, which could be caused by tubes cracking, the tube walls thinning, or metal fatigue. And if you do that, then you get a full meltdown. So, the people listening right now on our sister station, KPFK, let them know you don't want this opened up. You want this decommissioned. Also, from the environmental segment today, from Reuters, Roundup, an herbicide, could be linked to Parkinson's, cancer, and other health issues. This, according to this study. And the study is published in the peer-reviewed journal, Entropy. Quote, "Heavy use of the world's most popular herbicide, Roundup, could be linked to a range of health problems and diseases, including Parkinson's, infertility, cancers. The peer review report, published last week, said evidence indicates that residues of glyphosate, the chief ingredient in Roundup weed killer, which is sprayed over millions of acres of crops, has been found in food. Those residues enhance the damaging effect of other foodborne chemical residues and toxins in the environment to disrupt normal body functions and induce disease. The author of the report, a research scientist at MIT, was very concerned about this. Quote, the negative impact on the body is insidious and manifests slowly over time as inflammation damages cellular systems throughout the body. We've hit upon something very important that needs to be taken seriously and further investigated. You bet. I don't believe there's need for any further investigation as Roundup has been thoroughly investigated. Shouldn't be using it. We should be going to an organic system. That's one more reason why you should be eating organic and not using those pesticide sprays on your lawns, around your house. And finally, on the environmental element, this is from David Kirby from TakePart.com. Quote, scientists discover the agent used in the Gulf spill cleanup is destroying marine life. 3 years after the British Petroleum oil spill, new truths come to light from deep down inside the ocean. It says that 210 million gallons of Louisiana crude spewed into the Gulf of Mexico. The U.S. government allowed the company to apply chemical dispersants to the blossoming oil slick to prevent toxic gunk from reaching the fragile bays and beaches and mangroves of the coast, where so much marine life originates. But a number of recent studies show that British Petroleum and the federal government may have made a huge mistake, for which everything from microscopic organisms to bottlenose dolphins are now paying the highest price. After the spill, British Petroleum secured about a third of the world's supply of dispersants, namely Corex 9500 and 9527, according to the New York Times. Of the two, 9527 is more toxic. Corex dispersants emulsify oil into tiny beads, causing them to sink towards the bottom. Wave action and wind turbulence degrade the oil further. The evaporation concentrates the toxins in the oil or Corexit mixture, including dangerous compounds called polycyclic aromatic hydrocarbons, known to cause cancer and developmental disorders. When British Petroleum began spraying the Gulf, critics cried out. They said Corexit is not only toxic to marine life on its own, but when combined with crude oil, the mixture becomes several times more toxic than oil or dispersants alone. Not surprisingly, British Petroleum's chief executive, Bob Dudley, defended the use of dispersants. Quote, the toxicity of Corexit is about the same as dish soap, which is effectively what it is and how it works. End quote. He told stockholders, quote, in hindsight, no one believes that that was the wrong thing and it would have been much worse without the use of it. I do not believe anybody with almost any common sense would say waves of black oil washing into the marshes and beaches would have been a better thing under any circumstances, end quote. Well, British Petroleum says that Corexit is harmless to marine life, while the Environmental Protection Agency has waffled, saying both that long-term, quote, effects of dispersants on aquatic life are unknown, and that the data, quote, do not indicate any significant effects on aquatic life. Well, but many scientists, such as Dr. William Sayre, a Louisiana toxicologist, argue that Corexit can be deadly to people and sea creatures alike. Quote, Corexit components are also known as deodorized kerosene, he said in a written statement for the Gulf Oil Disaster Recovery Group. And he says, with respect to marine toxicity and potential human health risks, studies of kerosene exposure strongly indicate potential health risks to volunteers, workers, sea turtles, dolphins, breathing reptiles, and all species which need to surface for air exchanges, as well as birds and all other mammals. When Corexit mixes with and breaks down crude, it makes the oil far more bioavailable to plants and animals. And he testified that edible fish and shellfish from the Gulf are absorbing this, and he believes that that is all bad to the bone. Tissue samples taken prior to the accident had no measurable amount of the petroleum hydrocarbon in them. But after the oil spill, the scientists found tissue concentrations up to 10,000 parts per million, or 1% of the total. The study, he said, quote, shows the absorption of oil was enhanced by Corexit. So now, here's the my part of this. When I have been filming down on the area of Louisiana and Mississippi and Alabama and Texas, you see all these people now who have environmentally caused illnesses. They'll show you skin lesions that never existed before. People were out there helping rake up the oil on the sand and help save the animals, and they're all sick. And yet you wouldn't know that by the American media or by our government or by British Petroleum. Hundreds of thousands of people have been exposed to this, and we're not doing a thing about it. I'm Gary Knoll. Let's say hello to some people in our audience. Let's start with Kevin from Manhattan. Hi, Kevin.
Hi, Gary. I enjoyed your show for many years. I just have a quick question about, you mentioned a young woman in Afghanistan, a young girl named, I think it was Jamila?
Yes.
Okay. When we got in Afghanistan, there were no girls in school. Today, there are over 3.5 million girls in school in Afghanistan. And my question is, what is going to happen to the girls when we prematurely abandon them and run out of Afghanistan? I think we're leaving too soon. I think we owe it to them, since we put them in school for 10 years now, to stay the course to some extent. And I would like to know your thoughts on that. I mean, there's both sides to the story.
Okay. Let's pull back for a moment and depersonalize from what we may feel on any level that directly impacts it, and just look at the impact there. First and foremost, the Taliban were not the enemy of the United States. The Taliban's enemy are those who do not hold to the same religious scripture or adherence to Islamic law as they deem. As a result, the Taliban have historically been highly misogynist and extreme in their vilification of any woman in any role that would compete with them. And they use their own scripture to justify this. They don't want women working. You can't go outside unless you're accompanied by an immediate member of the family. They don't want young girls being taught anything except religious scripture. And so you see how, after the Taliban took power from the Northern Alliance, after the Russians were expelled, and they had also been trained through the Mujahideen that morphed into the Taliban, some of them did, that they wanted their country to be a strict Islamic country. Then you had the United States come in there, and we said, but we want you to have our form of democracy. And therefore, we began to support the drug dealers. The most powerful men in Afghanistan were the drug dealers. And each province is run by a warlord. And the warlord now, in fact, the second in command, as far as the government, is not one of Karzai. As subordinates, is a former warlord and a drug baron. The number one crop in is poppies, and hence heroin, from Afghanistan.
So you're on the right. It's outrageous. It's outrageous. But what are we going to do about the girls?
Okay, but hold on. I'm not finished yet.
Sorry. You're right. You're right.
All right. So now what we did, we on the one hand, we said that we have an interdiction program against the war on drugs, which I'm opposed to. I don't believe drugs should be criminalized. I've never used a drug in my life, but I don't believe that that is the real issue. In any case, so now the country that is producing more of this drug than any other country in the world, we're now having to subsidize. Not only do we subsidize, but we have to subsidize the actual warlords. And one of the things we did that's egregious is that we put a bounty, and here's how it worked. Anyone could come forward and accuse someone of being a terrorist or affiliating with the Taliban, or Al-Qaeda, and we then would take those people into some form of internment environment, including Guantanamo. What we didn't tell the world is that we paid bounties for these people, anywhere from a few thousand to many thousands of dollars, even though there, in 95% of the cases, there was absolutely no evidence these people were at all guilty of anything towards the United States or supporting terrorism. Now, that has cost us tens of billions of dollars that we pay for. And then it also means that we then start a whole program to support a complete corrupt government. Karzai just had to admit 2 days ago that, yes, the CIA had been dropping off bags with hundreds of millions of dollars in cash that he then used and kept. The largest bank in Afghanistan was found guilty at every level of laundering money from the ruling elite in Afghanistan, and that we even had to pay people to facilitate our trucks going to our bases to resupply, that the money that was given was then partly given to the Taliban. Now, understand this. You pay the Taliban, the people you're fighting, to allow you to get your supplies to a base. That's one of the most stupid things I've ever heard of.
Yep.
But everything in Afghanistan is corrupt. So on the one hand, when we said that we have opened up all these schools, in point of fact, over 90% of the schools have remained closed. It's a propaganda ploy. When George Bush's wife went over there and showed a school that was open, what we didn't show that 3 weeks later that school had closed. When we showed that we're opening up markets, for example, a chicken market, they brought in the chickens that day. They bought chickens from local people, brought them in, had all these people dressed up in an abandoned factory so that we could justify spending $2 million to build a factory in the middle of nowhere to bring them chickens when they didn't need it. And the moment the photographers went away, then everything went back and the chicken factory had never been opened, still to this day isn't. Everything in this country is corrupt. $5 billion in cash disappeared off one cargo plane. So I'm looking at a country that gives no rights to its own citizens, that is involved in sectarian violence, and that everyone in power is there because they are corrupted and corrupt everyone around them. So if we were there for the next 10 years, tell me this. Would you rather have the potential to have children in Afghanistan go to a school of their choosing, learning something that they choose from their curriculum, or would you rather have lives saved of everyone who is sacrificing, including Afghanistan's lives affected, including from drone strikes, including from privations, including from starvation, including from weather where they don't have anything given to them? And in one of the photographs that I put up on my website, you see a family of five. You see the little girl and the little boy are standing in water. They have no shoes. All the people in that photograph died from inclement weather. You're not seeing the true picture in Afghanistan or Iraq or any other country. I appreciate your concern for the children. I think that is noble. But the children are not being served. Everyone who can touch the money and keep the money are the ones. So if you're saying, would it be any different if we stayed longer? I say, remember Vietnam. Because
we abandoned Vietnam and more people were killed after we left.
That's not true. In point of fact, the killing stopped after we left. There was 3.5 million killed.
There were mass killings of people who worked with us. There were a lot of people killed after we abandoned them.
3.5 million were killed before we left. There were people who were, when they invaded the South, and by the way, and we left, all the people that worked for us were captured, but most of those, instead of being killed, were taken to indoctrination camps, a bad thing. But remember, we killed 400,000 people in secret raids in Cambodia. We killed over 200,000 Laos. We destabilized the entire area. We have over 10,000 people losing their legs each year.
How will they ever crawl out of the hole if we don't educate the girls? How will they ever crawl out of the hole? They won't. They won't be able to ever change that society if the women are not educated. That's 50% of the population. They're slaves. They're chattel slaves.
Okay, but why don't we pay attention to the young girls in this country who cannot go to school safely each day, who are being bullied, who don't have the money?
Our girls are living in Disneyland compared to those girls. They're slaves, Gary. They're slaves.
You're dealing with two separate issues. One issue...
Well, you raised the issue, Gary. You raised our girls. Our girls live in Disneyland, Gary.
I can show you an awful lot of Americans who don't have a proper education and because of that are going to be subjected to living a ghettoized existence against a system that is biased, prejudiced, misogynist, and racist. If we can't deal with those issues, how can we possibly impose our... I agree.
But it worked in Japan. It worked in Korea. It worked. We're still there. We owe it to them. That's just my opinion.
Hold on. At what point do we owe our own citizens the right to have clean water, clean air, health care, and the freedom to live an existence without having over 47% of all disposable dollars in our budget go to military-industrial complex, and only 5% of that is necessary. 97% of all the money spent in the United States on defense has nothing to do with defense at all.
This is why I support the station. I do support the station. I contribute to the station. Thank you, Gary.
I appreciate your call. Thanks a lot. We're out of time. I want to thank you all for calling in and sharing your points of view. Now it's time for Talk Back. And let's say hello to Michael from New York City. Hi, Michael.
Hi. I was wondering, what do you thought about Nell Ferguson? He has a book, A Sense of Money, A Financial History of the World. And, if I was to invest time in that book, would you think that the depiction that he is displaying is a real truth of what history is?
I haven't read the book.
Oh.
So I can't.
What do you think about Nell Ferguson in general, then?
I haven't. I'm not familiar with his writing, and until such time that I can read it, I can't. If you were willing to send me over his most important writing, I'll be happy to read it.
Okay.
All right?
Just, okay, thank you.
And then I'll address it. In studio, Luann. Hi, Luann.
Hello, Gary. I have an email here from one of your listeners. Her name is Marcia, and she's from New York. And she said that she had called in, and you gave her a number of things for improving her memory. And she said that within just not even a week, she said it made it possible for me to attain almost instant word recall just within days of using the protocol. So she was very much appreciating that. And she's asking to have you tell her what healing clay that you would suggest. She tried a Pascalite clay, but the FDA now limits it.
I would not suggest any clay because of the content of lead naturally occurring in the clay.
Mm-hmm.
You don't need clay to cleanse. You can use chlorophyll from spirulina or chlorella. And just eating roasted garlic each day, a whole bulb, will do as much as any clay can do without any harm to the system.
Got to make sure all your friends are having the same bulbs of garlic, though, Gary.
Yes. Next question.
Well, someone sent me an article here about Obamanomics. Rich get richer, everyone else gets poorer. And surely it says in the beginning when he first ran in 2008, he claimed his economic policies would foster economic growth from the bottom up and not just from the top down. Well, obviously, looking at the statistics, the rich are getting much richer by at least 21%, and the poor are getting poorer. And so they were very concerned about this. And the real mystery is why Obama's dismal economic results and the need for a serious course correction aren't getting the public attention they deserve. And I also want to remind everyone in the audience, if they haven't listened to the show from last night, I don't know anyone who would have had the courage to bring the panel on that you had that squarely faced the issues with our journalists today, why they aren't addressing the real issues. It was a phenomenal show.
Thank you. That was the Progressive Commentary Hour. It's being archived so you can download it. I believe that Barack Obama is probably the finest president in American history, better than George Washington, Abraham Lincoln, Thomas Jefferson, John Adams, Franklin Roosevelt, certainly a lot better than Franklin Roosevelt, when it comes to serving his core constituents. He is flawless. He has not made a single error. He's not betrayed them. He has not promised one thing and given another. So the problem is, we haven't paid attention to who his core audience is. It is Wall Street, right? It are multinational corporations. It always has been. He was defending, as a lawyer, coal industries, nuclear industries, prior to his becoming a senator. David Axelrod and Ron Emanuel, his chief political advisor and his chief of staff at the White House, were major representatives of the largest nuclear industry and owner in the United States, the largest bundlers of money for him, and the people who write the big checks. every one of his more than 1,700 important appointments have all come, without exception, not even one exception, from the ranks of the major multinational corporations. They all have certain things in common. They are all free market expansionist. They all believe in privatization of public assets, public land. They believe that that welfare is very important for corporations, but not for people. They believe that all debt, no matter how vicarious you were and how stupid you were in accumulating debt, should be forgiven if you're a corporation, but no debt should be forgiven if you're a person. That unlimited amounts of money, beyond imagination, over $21 trillion and counting, with no interest, should be given to these favored individuals, which has been, but not a penny should be reduced off a student loan interest or a pay debt, which could be the up to 500% interest you can pay an interest alone on a one of those pay debt and credit cards of different types and debit cards can go up to 2,000% if you're late and you can't pay. He has made privatization of prisons a priority, and he has made doubling down against the public's wishes on criminalizing marijuana to keep those prison beds filled. So you show me, I want anyone on the left, I want anyone from The Nation magazine, anyone from the, you know, from Democracy Now who love this man, show me where he has made a single mistake. President Obama is perfect for the people who bought him. Remember, Obama was selected like Bill Clinton before he was elected. In America, you don't have that much power unless you're first selected. So they have got exactly what they bought. Now, for everyone else, well, then, suck it up. You know, you bought an illusion. And now you're dealing with the illusion having disappointed you. You never look for the substance. And if you did, you would never have voted for him. You would have voted for a third-party candidate. We're out of time. Let's say hello to Utrice Lead. Hi, Utrice.
Hello, Gary. Just to elaborate a bit on what you were just saying, Penny Pritzker, the nominee for Commerce Secretary, now has become emblematic of the same spirit you were talking about Obama. She is worth about $2 billion and would be the richest cabinet member ever appointed. But today, we're talking about whatever it is people want to talk about because it's open forum on Lead Stories today.
Look forward to it, Utrice Lead, right now on the Progressive Radio Network.